Matty Sakaris joins us. Matt, welcome back to the show, my man. How are you?
Oh, very good. I'm just a stupid media member making trouble for smart Dennis Weidman.
Yeah, it's always fun.
Can you believe that text?
Well,
oh, my goodness.
Well, I probably can believe it that when you text something that you think is just going to your friend and no one else, like, I could understand that you would – now – because most time you don't think rational, right? The guy's like, oh, it's me against the world. He's disappointed, blah, blah, blah. It's 5 days after the fact, and he realizes, man, I'm just getting ripped apart here for what I did, even though it was stupid. Like, you shouldn't blame everybody. I think it's because he'd been called stupid. I'm guessing that's why he used that word. But either way, are you surprised that his phone was subpoenaed in all
this? Oh, very much so. Yeah. Very much so. He needs to go to the Tom Brady school of destroying evidence.
Exactly.
I mean, and frankly, guys, like, I guess it was subpoenaed.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, I find it odd that a court would want to get involved in this sort of an investigation. You know, you would have thought that that's, you know, not worth the court's time or attention. But, yeah, like, I mean, quite frankly, you know, I was surprised that, you know, I think Tom Brady did absolutely the right thing with Roger Goodell in the NFL. Says, no, you're not getting my phone. I'm sorry. No. My personal communication device? You don't get to look at that because you think I might have tampered with the footballs at the AFC Championship game. I just don't know where they have jurisdiction and the reach to be able to get that. They're sports leagues, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't a cop. This isn't a crown prosecutor. This is a sports league, for heaven's sakes. But I guess they're sufficiently lawyered up that they know how to go about getting that. But, yeah, no, I just Dennis Weidman, no, son, you're not in this boat because of the stupid refs in the stupid media. It's your own stupidity that got you where you're at right now. And I applaud the commissioner for upholding the suspension because, look, if that's truly how he felt, the text message to his teammates, and I've seen that he was out golfing and hiking during the All-Star break when he was supposed to have a concussion, it's quite clear that he wasn't being truthful. He wasn't being accountable, and that his apology rings hollow.
That's fair. Matt Sakaris from TSN 1040 joins us now. Matt, big story coming out. You know, Friedman had it that maybe the owner's not on the same page as his GM and his president. What are you hearing in Vancouver?
Yeah, this has not been a very good week for the Vancouver Canucks. Saturday night, the report on Hockey Night that the GM wants to tear things down and go full rebuild, but the owners don't want to do that, and that has been the mandate here, guys. You know, we are going to retool and get younger as we continue to strive to make the playoffs. So it's been a little bit of, you know, half pregnant, right? Like, that's what our listeners and analysts talk about. Can you really do both at this stage of the game? And so that's going to be the test here between now and the trade deadline. Are they committed to that notion of trying to make the playoffs? I think they're six out at this point. And they've been dropping home games left, right, and center. Or do they finally come to the realization, top to bottom in the organization, that they have to tear this down and go for the long rebuild?
Well, Matt, as you well know, we've seen both versions here in Edmonton. They tried to fudge it for a couple of years there and do it on the fly. It didn't really work, and then they finally started the tear down with Taylor Hall, and we're now in year nine overall, so it's yet to show dividends.
Yeah.
Regardless of which road
that's
you go down.
That's the cautionary tale to here, Rob. And like, you know, like a lot of the people who support that here, you know, point to Chicago and L.A. and Pittsburgh and different teams that were bad for several years and were able to pick up the high draft picks and get themselves to a cup. But yeah, Edmonton is always invoked as the cautionary tale here. And for the most part, most people who support the full rebuild here, I do believe, you know, have it in their mind that it's going to be something in the order of 2 to 4 years. And part of our job is trying to tell them, you know, guys, you pick the wrong people or you don't have the right balance, it could be much longer than that. And so, you know, that's why I'm a little sympathetic to ownership, you know, not necessarily wanting to open that can of worms, one, because of the length of time it could take, but also just I personally believe you have a covenant with the fans to do your absolute best. Try your best. Do whatever you can within the boundaries of the rules to win. As soon as you as an organization, as a culture, start saying that losing is okay, and I'm sure you guys have seen it, it has a way of infecting and infesting your employees, and it can be very, very unhealthy.
Well, here's the thing, and you're right. The players will go out and do their level best. These tank jobs are orchestrated by who sets the lineups and who gets the players. But regardless of which road the Canucks choose to go down, right or wrong, one thing, you need ownership and management to be on the same page.
Oh, no question about that. And that's why if they can't get together here in the next couple of weeks and decide what they're going to do. And to be fair, the Canucks did deny it and say they were on the same page as ownership, and ownership wasn't meddlesome or calling hockey shots or anything like that. And you're right about it being top down, that it's ownership or management that decides. But of course, the message rings pretty clearly in the room, right? I mean, like, the room knows when they don't have the horses to go out there and win on a nightly basis. And for the Vancouver Canucks, they've had, you know, an older team that gave it its best shot. They probably held out a little too long in believing that this group could get back to a championship contender status. And what's becoming evident here this season, after a nice season last year where they surprised some people and got 100 points and home ice in the playoffs, is that they aren't contenders in any way, shape, or form. I mean, they could get to the playoffs, but they're not a good bet to go anywhere if they get there. So I think it's starting to sink in here across the entire organization that they do need to go with younger players, and they do have to spend the next couple of years trying to build this thing back up.
You know, what's interesting about that, Matt, is going with younger players only works if you make sure you've got some legitimate veterans around to kind of help support them along the way, which leads me to the question, like, they've got the Sedin, so that would be a huge bonus. Guys who know how to play the game well, know how to work in the community exceptionally well. What about, you know, Dan Hamhuis and others? Who do you see on the trade market for the Canucks leading into the deadline?
Well, I don't think they have a lot of assets to trade, Jason. That's part of the problem. Dan Hamhuis and Radim Verbata are the two unrestricted free agents whose names come up the most. In Verbata's case, he's having a dreadful season. He scored 30 goals last year. I think he's got 10 or 11 this year. 20-some points. $5 million player. So I'm not sure what he's going to fetch in return. I think, you know, they'd be lucky to get a second-round draft pick for him now, probably something in the order of a third or a fourth. Hamhuis has a full no-trade clause and took $1 million less per year to come play in his home province. I'm not entirely convinced that Hamhuis will accept a trade just anywhere. You know, I think it's going to have to be a good situation for Hamhuis to want to waive his no-trade clause, because it's quite clear with Dan that there are other things in life that are important to him. So those are the two names that get bandied about the most. I think they'd love to trade Burrows, who's, you know, is 4.5 against the cap, I think, one more year. I'm not sure that there are going to be many takers at that price tag, because he doesn't score goals anymore. And the only other assets on top of that that I think that are in the realm of possibility is whether or not they want to trade one of their young forwards, and this may sound familiar in Edmonton, to get a young defenseman where there isn't a whole lot coming right now. So, I suspect they'll trade Verbata, but whether it goes beyond that, I don't know.
Interesting, Matt. You know, you talk about the Sedins, veteran leadership, been around, had terrific careers, but I'm curious to see which road they do go down, because right now the Sedins aren't what they were in terms of performance, and I'm thinking if they're only going to be the wise old veterans in the dressing room, that maybe you go down to bare metal on this one, and the timing is such that you get a group coming up at the same time, and you've maybe found a replacement for those guys as impact guys.
Yeah, and I'll say this, we've been amazed that the Twins have played as well as they have played this year. I mean, when you take a look at the level at which they're producing, especially given their age, it's pretty darn good.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure it could continue much, much longer. Of course, we've tried to count them out before. And Daniel Sedin, 46 points in 56 games this year, including 22 goals for someone his age. I mean, you take a look at the NHL leaders around them. Most of them are much younger than him. They got 2 years left on the deal. They're absolutely going to finish their career as Vancouver Canucks. I don't ever see this ownership or management group going to them and asking them to accept a trade somewhere else. And even if that were to happen, I could absolutely see the Twins saying, no, we would retire before we would accept a trade anywhere else. It's the only hockey market they've known. Their families grew up here. Outside of them, though, over the next couple of years, yeah, I think it is going to be taken down to the studs. I mean, Ryan Miller's under contract next year. That'll be his last year as a Canuck. I'm not sure they'll make an effort to re-sign Ham Hughes, even though they need defensemen. If so, I imagine they'll be very cautious with where they go in terms of term on him. I would doubt that Burrows is back at the expiration of his contract. Anik Hansen might be somebody who they ask to re-sign for a longer term. He's been quite good for them this year. And then you got a couple of other guys in the form of Chris Tanev and Brandon Sutter who are under contract, and Alex Edler for several more years. But yeah, I mean, outside of that group, I mean, we're talking about five or six players here who I think I could legitimately see being Vancouver Canucks over the next 2 to 3 years.
Oh, Maddie,
of the veteran group, yeah, of course. Yeah, and then there's some of the young kids who will be around, I suspect.
It will be interesting to see what the Canucks do, and because I'm telling you, the biggest day in Canada for hockey this year might be the draft lottery, because Canada could, they go in right now with a 67% chance of one of the seven teams winning it.
Jason, I think all seven teams will be present and vying for the title that Edmonton has held so often over the last several years, and I further predict that it will be amongst the highest-rated moments on Canadian television all year long.
Yeah, I will.
When those ping pong balls go in the hopper.
and the great part, because it's not even just the first pick. It's going to be the second one.
Oh, I know.
And the third
part.
One. Yeah.
Oh, I know. It's an expanded lottery just in the nick of time for the Canadian Seven to all participate.
And, you know, I'll be floored if the Oilers win the first one, but I won't be shocked if they win the second or the third.
Oh, well, now where do you presume they'll finish, though, Jason? Because I think with McDavid back and the look of the Canucks right now and the Jets, if they sell off Ladd and other, I could actually see the Oilers leapfrogging some of these teams in the West.
Maybe, but Greib is out, Klefbom's out, their back end is atrocious.
Yes, this is true, but maybe they can outscore their problems. Like, the Canucks can't outscore their problems. Their back end's atrocious, too. They just have nobody who can score outside of the Twins.
Yeah.
Like, Edmonton, I can see winning 6-5 games here as the season goes along.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, put it this way. What are we today, February 17th or what? Jason, let's circle back on the final day of the regular season, because I would venture to bet that Edmonton gets more points than Vancouver from this day forward.
Okay, and that can be fair. The difference is Vancouver's spotted him a six-pack. That's the difference.
This is true. This is true. But they got some. Do they not have head-to-head remaining?
Yeah, they got two head-to-head. I think,
yeah,
for sure,
there you go. Four-point game.
Well, it could be big games, man. We'll be talking about those later in the year.
I'm not sure they'll be big, but the race to the bottom, they'll be interesting. Put it that way.
You betcha, buddy. Thanks as always, Matty. Appreciate your time.
All right, guys. Thank you. Matt